Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. The programme's website is insideed.com, and there you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney, and you can follow the programme on Twitter with the handle at InsideEd. This week, I'm pleased to bring you the second part of my interview with Jane Shimizu, who teaches in Skull Katrina Junior School in Galway. In last week's wide-ranging discussion, you heard Jane's views on topics such as planning for the year, daily planning for teaching, subject integration, record keeping, assessment, homework, and active learning. Jane also told us about professional development she participated in and about the science course she typically gives each summer. She received an award for her teaching of science in 2010 from the Institute of Physics. Through the Galway Education Centre, she has been a major contributor to professional development of teachers in science and maths. In this second part of the interview, Jane tells us about computer coding with her class, deciding to become a teacher, what inspires her, and how her teaching has changed over the course of her career to date. I first asked Jane to tell me about the science experiments she can't live without.
Oh, there's so many. One of my very favourite one is making a spray where you've got a little cup of water and two straws, and you make the spray by making an area of low pressure at the top. You'd really need to see it. It's not going to sound so great on the radio, but when you have your two straws, you've got to decide what angle you're going to have the straws at. Now, if the straws are at an acute angle or a right angle, the experiment will work. But if your straws are at an obtuse angle, when you blow into the top straw, you'll end up getting bubbles in the container of water, and that's not going to work. But what you do is you blow, if you've got a straight angle, you blow across the top of the straw, and that makes an area of low pressure at the top of the straw, so the water and the air that are in the straw will rush up to take their place. And as you continue to blow, you separate the water into water droplets and you spray the person beside you. It's wonderful. We all love it, teachers and kids.
I'm sure this one we can look up on YouTube.
No, it's one we'll have to do.
Okay. So say again. So the idea is to create a spray.
To create a spray, and the reason for creating a spray is because we use so many sprays in our environment. And, you know, when I'm talking to the children, we think of all the different ways you would use a spray. And of course, everybody knows about spray polish, and but they get very excited when you talk about deodorants and hairspray. And then we take it out into the environment and say, well, you know, are these sprays good for the environment? What could you be using instead of a spray? Are they economical? Are they cost efficient? What could you use instead?
What other projects have you undertaken with your own class?
This year now we've done the Hour of Code and the Week of Code. So we've done coding. So they're only 7 and 8, they're young children. So rather than getting into depth with any of them, we've had a look at Scratch. We have had a look at WeDo programming with the Lego. We've had a look at the Hour of Code, and we've done some Minecraft coding. It's very popular. And we also did some Frozen coding, popular enough, but the boys were a little bit put out, not all of them. And what else have we done? We used to do Green Wave, but Green Wave now was where you look at the signs of spring, but that now has fizzled off, so we're not doing that anymore. We also do almost anything that's on the go.
And how did you get interested in coding yourself?
Well I always was interested in computers and IT. And I guess, you know, looking at stuff that children can do, well, if they can do it, I can do it. So it really is very interesting. Now, I'm not saying our level is very high. Our introductory level is very enthusiastic. And I guess, you know, that's enough for some children. And what I will do is, if we are doing, say, the Hour of Code, and we're using the Hour of Code will have links that you can do at home. So what we will do at school is we will use it at school, and we'll do it a few times at school. And then I will put it on our web page of our blog. And I will say to the children, now I've just put that on your computer at home. So if you want to do what we did at school, go on to your computer at home. It's there. And I'll actually show them on the blog where they can click into it. So if they click the picture of the Minecraft on the blog, it will click into the Hour of Code link. And they'll be able to go from there. So sometimes, quite a lot of the time, the children will say, yeah, I got home and it was on my computer at home, so I did it and this is how far I got. And what they don't realise actually is I didn't actually physically put it on their computer. I put it on the blog. Their parents access the blog and they're doing the same links that we're doing at school. So, and that's very important. And I don't mind, you know, sometimes teachers say, well, maybe they'll work ahead of what the others have done in class. Let them work ahead. They're obviously interested. They obviously show some aptitude for it. Well, then they should be working ahead. There's no point in those children waiting for the ones in school in case we do it again, or while we do it again, or let them work ahead. If they found an area that they're interested in, fantastic. So if we do find sites for maths or English or the 1916 Rising, I will put it on the website. We'll use it in school and I will say, now it's on your computer, go look at it at home.
And if we just get back to the coding for another minute, the children are in second class, so they're 7, 8 yeah. years of age. Are they able to do enough at that age to have some kind of a product at the end of it, or some sense of satisfaction that they've been able to do coding at however basic a level it is?
Well, we tried Scratch, and Scratch is lovely, but I think I would personally, as a teacher, need kids who are a little bit older or had a little bit more time just to concentrate on Scratch. But the great thing about the Hour of Code is when you click into one, either Minecraft or Frozen or Angry Birds or any of these where you write your own coding, there's actually a limited number of lessons. So as you go through the lessons, it will say, congratulations, you've finished this level, you're on to the next level. Now, if you get it, the aim is that it will take you an hour to get through all of the levels of this one tutorial. And if you do that, you get a certificate at the end. So you can print off the certificate and say, look, I did it. Look at all I know. And I've gone through the basics of coding. I've done the repeat blocks. I've done the if-then blocks. So, you know, I actually have been coding. Now, I guess for kids who manage to get to the end of the various tutorials and print them out multiple certs, then they need to be going further. They need to be going to Coder Dojos, or they need to be getting into Scratch. And actually, at that stage, like a lot of other subjects, you know, we can only take them so far within the limited school day. And if they are showing amazing potential, we get back to the parents and say, look, you know, your child is showing incredible potential at this. Would you think of, how about bringing them to? They'd love it. And that would count for anything, for coding or maths or PE or any of these things. If they're showing potential, we normally get back to the parents and say, look, you know, these things are in our area. Yeah. Would you think of taking them?
And is that a specific website, the Hour of Code?
Yes. Yeah. So it's, and it, what it is it, there is a week of code that's before Christmas, and then the Hour of Code is, I think, December. But what they aim to do is they aim to get as many people from all around the world coding. So, I mean, it's a pleasure to be involved in things that are bigger than we are. And this is an international program, and it aims to get children involved from all over, from the States, from everywhere. And it's nice to be flying the flag for Ireland and be the ones trying it over here.
And do you know the URL offhand? Like, is it Hour of Code?
Yes.
HOUROFCODE.com, presumably?
Presumably. One of them, if you Google Hour of Code, you'll find it.
Hour of Code, you'll find it. Okay.
Or go to our website.
That's what I was. That's exactly what I want to talk to you about next, because you've been keeping a blog since about 2007.
2007.
Yeah.
Oh, you're very
so
well.
How did that come about?
Well, we had no school website. So through the Galway Education Centre, and they're marvellous, they were offering Start Your Own Website courses. So we signed up for it. I'm not sure, yeah, I think two or three of us from the school signed up for it with the idea that we would start our own website. So it was a Blogger website. So we started and we used Blogger, and I absolutely love it. And I have to say, it was Brendan Smith, who's called Speedy, and he works in Galway, but he was absolutely marvellous. He held our hands, and for the first year, every time we had a problem, I would say, I can't do this, and he'd come out to the school and show me how to do it. What he did is he got one or two involved, and then he redid the course again, but this time with teachers from our school. So then there were about 10 of us involved.
So, but it didn't materialise as a school website in your case. You actually kept it as a class blog.
No,
right?
It's a school website, but each class has their own blog.
Okay.
On the blog.
Okay. So, and you've given an idea already of how you use it. For example, when you were doing the coding, you put the link up there for the parents to use with the children at home. What other ways do you expect the children or the parents, and how do you use the blog yourself?
Well, anything interesting we're doing at school, hey, it's all interesting, but we can't take photos of everything. We would take photos of it and we would put it up. And that would be on the website. So at one level, we have parents, and we have international grandparents who are accessing the blog from their different countries. We had a very involved Indian blogger for a while who was watching our blog from India because his grandson was in it, and they keep an eye on what the children are doing. It's nice for them to see photos of the children with their friends doing whatever it is they're doing. And from my teacher's point of view, I'm hoping that if we're talking about safety and there's a picture of our kids wearing their high-vis vests, that the parents would also talk to the children about safety, so that we're actually talking about the same things at the same time. So if I've been talking about healthy eating or teaching or pollution or any of the different things, that the parents would also, if they've seen the blog, also talk to the children about that. Because sometimes when kids come home and the parents say to them, how was school? And they say, fine. And what did you do? Nothing. That the parents actually can get back to it and say, well, I know that you did this, that and the other because I saw it, and, you know, what did you learn about it? So it gets the parents very much involved in what's going on. But also then if we have links or for learning songs, I use it then as a teacher in school. I will put the things that I have taught or want to teach on my page on the blogger. And then when I go in the morning, I can, rather than, you know, faffing around looking for URLs, that it's just there. So it's very easy for me to search, you know, we were doing a thing about the selfish giant. It's very easy to find a few different cartoons of the selfish giant, and maybe I might find a poem or a song, or, you know, we're doing the willow pattern, and I can show them a picture of a willow pattern plate, and then there's a poem that goes with it, and we could talk about China and the Chinese New Year. I can put all those links within the same post, so that it's very easy for me to gather information and use it then in school. So I would use it. I hope the parents would use it. I know some of the grandparents would use it. And the bottom line is the children love to see themselves. Now, of course, with our internet policy, we don't have individual children. They will always be in groups, and we don't name the children. So if I invite parents in to talk about their job, I will say, we have a child in our class whose daddy is a... But the child is never... singled out, the picture is never singled out, and the name is never singled out, so that deals with safety issues regarding the internet. But they do like to see themselves on, or, you know, and sometimes we can go back to the archive and have a look at maybe September, and they can say, well, we did that in September, and I kind of forget, but that was fun.
And do you get much feedback from parents about the blog?
Yes, yeah. And in fact, because I oversee the blog, sometimes when they've been in my class for a year and then they go into a different class and the teacher doesn't blog as much, I will get comments saying, can we have an update, please? But, you know, it's one of these things that people like to do or they don't like to do. And in all honesty, I cannot do it in my school day. All of this is done at home. So you can't expect other members of staff to do this along with the other things that they do at home, their preparation, their organisation, their own information, that you can't expect people to do it, especially if they're not very into IT. So different teachers hit it more than others.
And about how long would you spend, say, in a week on the blog?
Not that long. How long would I spend? A day, possibly a half an hour. Now, I may hit a day, if I'm looking up, we'll say that Chinese New Year, if I'm looking for a poem, a song, an artwork, that will take me considerably longer because I'll be Googling. I'll be trying to find out and then making links and all that kind of thing. But if I'm only just putting up the photos from today, that doesn't take very long.
You travelled to Japan.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, I was doing karate fairly seriously after college, in and after college, and... Then I couldn't get a job. I came out in the 80s and I couldn't get a job like most people my generation. And a lot of my friends were heading off to the United Arab Emirates. So I came home one weekend and I said to my mum, I think I'll go off to the United Arab Emirates. And she said, well, I've just seen an ad in the paper for the JET program in Japan. How about that? And I thought, JET program and karate all at the same time. That sounds like my kind of thing. So I got a place on the JET program and I headed off to teach English.
Does the JET program still exist?
Yes, it certainly does.
What does JET stand for?
Japan Exchange and Teaching Program. So I headed off. I was one of, not very many, maybe about 20 Irish people who headed off. And of course, as soon as we got over there, we split up into the different places to which we'd been assigned. So I ended up with 29 other international people in Mie Prefecture. And that's where Suzuka Circuit is. And we were sent off to different cities and countryside areas to go and teach Japanese or teach English in Japan. But what we were assigned to is we were assigned to city halls, town halls, into the Department of Education. And then from there, the schools would request that we would go out to them. So you were assigned a different block. Now, my assignment was for junior high school students, so they were 12 to 15. And this, I would be assigned to different schools, and the teacher would come in and talk to me about what they would like me to do with their class. And then I would go out to their class, and they would stay in the class, and I would teach with them. So that, at the least educational side of the spectrum, I would sit in the classroom and the teacher would say, Miss Jane will now read page 2. And I would stand up, read page 2 and sit down and go back to sleep again. That was the very least educational experience I have. And the best I had, there was one teacher and she was incredible. And when I would walk into the class, she would say, OK, rearrange your tables. You are now border controls from different countries. Now, would everybody take their new passport? If you're not at immigration, you are a passenger. And then they would have to go around to all the different immigration stations, and the security people would say, hello, what is your name? How old are you? Where are you going? How long would you stay? And the passengers then would have to answer all those questions, and they'd get a stamp on their passport and move on. And then the following day, the roles would be reversed. So that, you know, the experiences were just incredible. And because I was dealing with multiple teachers in multiple schools, it was a great learning experience for me.
And how long were you there for?
2 years, yeah. Okay.
And what differences did you notice between education in Japan and education in Ireland?
Well, that case that I just said was a rarity, actually. There were a number of really amazing teachers. But in general, when I went into the classrooms, the children sat in straight rows. There was a lot of repetition. The teacher would say something, the children would repeat it. I know that for a lot of teachers, and I could see this happening, they would ask a question and they would start at the top left-hand corner and they would go down one child after another, and the questions just went down the rows like that. Now, if there was a child who was less able, they used to skip over them. And I know that in Ireland, where individuality is really, really highly prized, over there it's not. Being a member of the group is more highly prized. Therefore, to do things together, to be at the same level, is more highly prized than having your own opinions. Some of the really good teachers would say, I'm so glad you're coming to us on Tuesday because it means I don't have to use the book on Tuesday. If you weren't coming, I would have to be on page 6 of the book because it's Tuesday the 4th. Whereas now that you're coming, I can put the book away and we can do something else. So a lot of the teaching meant that everybody was on the same page of the same book on the same day. Which I wouldn't see much of in Ireland. But in Ireland, I'm dealing with the lower end of primary school. Over there, it's junior high. So I can't say for sure that things are, they may be a little bit more in line when you go into a secondary school in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the reasons why I'm kind of, you know, thinking about the difference is that in international tests, Japanese children tend to do better than Irish children in these tests, despite the fact that the education system seems more formal or more rigid or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, what has that to do with? Has that to do with the teaching style? Has that to do with the amazingly high respect they have for teaching and learning? Has it to do with the fact that they have much smaller families, therefore there's an awful lot of parental time and effort just ploughed into one or two children? I don't know. And I know the stuff that I did maths in university, in college, and I know that the standard that they are at the end of high school is the standard that I was at the end of college. It's the same stuff we were learning.
But then a lot of them go to grind schools as well after school.
They do, and they start grind schools really young. They start them right at kindergarten. So they're doing grinds from kindergarten, mainly in English. English is one of the highest grind things that they can do because they understand that it is the language of business.
So you must have had a status out there then as an Irish teacher who spoke English. And given that that's something that a lot of people there wanted to learn.
Oh, yeah, it was like being a film star. And I mean, it had its good and bad. Everywhere I went, you know, I was recognised. And I got lots and lots of presents from the I made it myself to the, you know, this is extremely expensive and we want you to have it. But then also I couldn't go shopping with everybody watching, without everybody watching what was in my basket. And yeah, it was my one stab at being a celebrity.
And what was life like outside of education in Japan?
it's hard to understand, but I was living there. Therefore, I was doing the things I would have been doing when, if I was living at home. I was shopping, I was cooking, I was involved in karate. Well, it was Kempo over there. I was cycling a lot. My day, because I was living there, was an ordinary day. So in lots of ways, it was similar to what I would have been doing if I'd been at home. And things that are so exotic, you know, the temples and Buddhism and the way of life and the respect and bowing when I'm on the phone, that just became a part of life. So, you know, outsiders looking in on it would have found it, you know, I became very Japanese in ways, and people looking in would find that bit strange. But when you're living there, you take on the cultural mannerisms of the people who are there.
And you took off your shoes when you entered the house?
Well, I always did that at home, actually, incidentally, even growing up. But yes, we always took off our shoes.
If we go back a bit, Jane, originally to when you were leaving secondary school, why did you become a teacher?
Do you know what? That was the hardest decision of my life. I had to go to a few different career guidance teachers because my parents were concerned about what I should do. And I had two choices, and I passionately wanted both of them. I wanted to be a primary school teacher, and I wanted to be an engineer, preferably an electronic engineer. And I went to various different career guidance people, and they said, what are your favourite subjects at school? And I said, without a doubt, they're maths and physics. I also quite like chemistry, and biology is quite good too. French, I don't really mind, and the rest, take it or leave it. English and Irish, I really have very little time for. And they would say, and so that's obviously engineering. And then they would say, what do you do after school? And I said, well, I'm a brownie leader and I play the recorder and I like being out with my fishing net and I like looking for four-leaf clovers and I like people. And they're saying, well, obviously that's teaching. Now go and make your own decision. And it was a terrible one. I do remember going to various churches and saying a prayer and saying, please show me which way I should go. And you know what? I chose the teaching and I have never, ever regretted it. I think I would have liked the engineering too, but I really liked the teaching and I so enjoy the different people and the characters and all the communication between the teacher and the children and the parents and children with children. I just love it. I can't see that I would have loved engineering as much. I would have liked the subject. I'm not so sure I would have liked the job. I do like the job of teaching.
And what keeps you motivated or inspired as a teacher?
The kids. The questions they ask. I'm like a big kid myself. And often people would say to me, I wish I was in your classroom. And I think, yeah, so do I. It sounds very interesting. Hey, I am. I am in my classroom. It's great. That, you know, life is interesting. The kids are interesting. The stuff we learn about is interesting. The stuff we try is interesting. We don't always get it right. And sure, it doesn't matter, you know. And I look back at the end of the year and I think, you know, look at all the progress we've made during the year. And as I say to my kids, you know, you guys are my guys. There is nobody in this school that I love more than anybody else at the moment except you guys. And then when I go on next year, they will be my guys. You know, it's lovely.
How has your teaching changed over the last 25 years or so that you've been teaching?
Well, I guess when I started first, I thought I should be the teacher and they should be the kids. And the longer I teach, the more I realise I'm learning too. It's not a case of me and them. It's a case of us. Okay, I'm the one with the plan. I'm the one who have decided what we're going to do for today. I'm the one with the organisation skills. But actually, you know, we're all learning stuff. And even if I'm only relearning stuff, even if I'm relearning tables or spellings that I already know, it's quite interesting. And they're hitting it for the first time, which is very interesting. So I guess the change really has been from me as a teacher and them as my learners to we're all part of a team. We're all trying to get in the same direction. And we probably, not definitely, will get there. You know, and that has changed a lot. And I guess the more experienced I get, the less I have to justify notes or, although I have my notes, or keeping to a timetable, although I am aware of my timetable, the less I feel that those are important. And the more I feel, you know, education is not about learning. It's about discovering. And I know, and certainly having taught infants for so long, I know they won't remember what I told them. I know they won't remember what we did in class. But what I also know is that if I have managed to sow a seed, that seed is going to take a long time to quash. So if they've decided after my year that they love bugs and insects, or they love science, or they love art, that it will take a long time before they unlove it, once they have realised that I love it and I'm good at it. So planting the seed has become more important than imparting knowledge.
And you teach in a junior school, so the highest level is second class. Do you ever wish that you could teach an older age group, fifth or sixth class?
Never. In fact, I've taught infants for 17 years and I never wanted to teach another class, and now I'm up in second class and I realise, golly, I teach anything from second class down. But I know I was on the supply panel in Galway for a number of months, and you know, I enjoyed every class. And then during Science Week, I usually go out to other schools and I teach science, but I'm only with their school for the day. So they will normally ask me to do third to sixth class, and I love every minute of that too. So I guess, you know, it's a huge gift to like what you're doing when you're doing it. So if you're asking me at the moment, second class are the best. If you asked me last year, I would have said infants were the best. And if you ask me during Science Week, which are the best, I like them all. And, you know, I give courses to teachers in the summer. I do like teaching the adults as well. There's a certain energy that comes with that too that I enjoy.
And finally, Jane, would you advise a young person today to become a primary school teacher?
I would, if that's what you want. Don't bother doing it for the long holidays and the short working hours. If you like it, you'll spend a portion of your summer holidays, of every holidays, thinking about school, getting stuff ready for school, looking at websites for school. You'll spend more than your school day thinking and doing stuff for school. So, you know, if you like it, it's the best job. If you don't like it, yeah, go find yourself something that will be more suitable, because you know what, the hours and the holidays are good, but it's not worth doing teaching, it's not worth doing anything unless you're going to enjoy it.
Sound career advice there from Jane Shimizu, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. That concludes my interview with Jane, and I want to thank Jane Shimizu for her time in recording the interview. I love to receive your feedback, so if you have any comments or suggestions on this week's programme or any programme, please write to me by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can find links to over 240 previous programmes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.